You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today will not be a short Monday show because I don't have that Monday appointment. This is finals week at Richland College. However, I wanted to touch upon and focus upon what's going to happen tomorrow in Nevada, namely in Las Vegas, the duel in the desert, or the desert duel, whichever you prefer. And that's between what I call the outside leaders. And who are the outside leaders? Obviously, Donald Trump and our own Senator Ted Cruz. Remember, Ted Cruz was not expected to be the senator from Texas, but because of the Tea Party and because of his persistence, he was very much an outsider and overcame a lot of Republican opposition to become our senator. So I still consider him an outsider. And you need to understand, the Washington establishment, especially the Senate, they don't like Ted Cruz. Because he's rocking the boat. He's exposing their corruption. He's exposing their lack of leadership. And the fact that we have two big, huge, big government parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The Republican establishment hates Ted Cruz. However, they absolutely fear and are in panic about Donald Trump. Ted Cruz has been in the news. Apparently a conversation to, I believe, I'm not sure who exactly he was talking to. I think he was talking off the record to donors, but someone taped it. And I'm going to play the whole thing because there's several revealing things. But this has been a focus. I've already heard several talk shows present parts of it. I'm going to play the whole thing because one of the things I've learned a long time ago, and this is a perfect example of it, what the news media is guilty of, both left, right, and center, is quoting people out of context to slant it one way or the other, really to cause mischief by doing it. So I wanted to let you have the opportunity to hear the whole clip. Now, I thought it was somewhat unwise of Ted Cruz to discuss this openly like he did. For the simple reason, you never know who's listening and who's recording, and especially with cell phones today. I seldom use my cell phone, and I definitely don't record people, but I could. I could also do video, and that's the problem that all political candidates encounter. The way to think of it, and I know the professionals know this, Ted Cruz knows this, you're on 24/7. If you don't want the public to know something or your opponents to know something, don't talk about it to anybody. Keep it in your head. Because if even you talk to who you think is your most trusted person, that person unintentionally can tell somebody else. And that can lead to a lot of problems. So I won't keep you in suspense. I really want to play this because I have a number of comments, and then I want to comment on what Donald Trump, how he reacted to it, but more importantly, what should Donald Trump and Ted Cruz be doing tomorrow? Now, before I play the clip, I need to, full disclosure here, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat. I'm very much my political philosophy is one of classical liberalism. In the United States, that's called being a libertarian or libertarianism. In Europe, it's called being a liberal, but not in the American sense. American liberals today like to be called progressive. They're a big government. And that's the problem with both parties. The Democratic Party, for over 100 years, has been the party of big government. They want to expand the size and scope of the federal government. And that ultimately has led to a very bloated government that the American people can't afford. And you see that in every year being massive deficits of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. In several years, the first 3 years of the Obama administration, trillions of dollars, where a trillion, for example, the very first year of the Obama administration was $1,400 billion. Their answer to every crisis is more and more government, another regulation, another tax, another government program. The problem is, so the Republican Party. The difference between the two is what they want to spend it on. The Democrats are largely for bigger welfare programs, more and bigger, as well as more entitlement programs, such as Obamacare. Even though today we are fast approaching, in less than a year, we'll be over $20 trillion. $20 trillion is $20,000 billion. $20,000 billion. We're over 100% in terms of percent of GDP. And the danger point is around 80%. Now, some critics will say, well, you got to consider the assets. I understand the United States has federal government owns a lot of land. But if it's to reduce the debt, it's going to have to sell that land. And that should be discussed in a presidential campaign. How can we reduce or eliminate the federal government? They're not discussing that. What the media did last week, and I covered it in the shows last week, and when I say the media, left, right, and center, the major television networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, as well as Fox, as well as your major newspapers, New York Times, well, I don't know how long they're going to last. The Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, and other newspapers, as well as the political elitist establishment of both parties, went after Donald Trump. That was the week that they were going to take out Donald Trump. It didn't succeed, I think, at all. Not at all. It benefited Donald Trump. And we're going to see that in the poll numbers, which I'll discuss after playing this clip. Now, this is Ted Cruz speaking, I believe, to a group of supporters. And this is the audio. And before I play it, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's Pronk Pops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll see my photograph of yours truly in the studio. Right below it, links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows. And this is show 592. And this is Monday. And then you'll have my notes. Now, if you don't see my notes, all you need to do is click on the word more. That will give you the notes. So when I say notes, what am I talking about? Photographs, cartoons, statistics, YouTube videos, articles, a lot of information. I give you that information because I tell all my listeners, I'm giving you my opinion, commentary on news stories. And the news story right now on all your networks, as well as in talk radio, is the upcoming debate tomorrow on CNN. And I'm looking forward to it. And if you have not listened to any debate, I strongly recommend you listen to this, because it will very much be the desert duel. And it's really between the outsiders, and that is Donald Trump and Ted Cruz versus, and the outsiders are the leaders here, folks. They lead in the polls, but they also are the leaders, versus what I call the followers. Some would call it the political elitist establishment. They're the insiders. The followers, they don't want to lead, they want to follow the crowd. And that means the road to serfdom and bigger government. And I think the followers, the insiders, are going to lose. But first, let me play Ted Cruz.
Let's answer how we win the primary.
It has to do with every question.
It's very much, let me analyze the primaries a couple of ways to tell you how we win. As confident as I am in the general, if anything, I'm more confident in the primary. But let's analyze it two different ways. First, the macro level. Historically, there have been two lanes in the Republican Party in the primary. There's been a moderate lane and a conservative lane. In past elections, typically, there's one consensus moderate candidate and all the money is fine. And on the conservative side, there are a ton of us. Nobody has any money, and we fight like cats and dogs. And that's why in past primaries, typically, the moderate wins the nomination and then goes on to lose the general election because millions of conservatives stay home and don't vote. What is incredibly encouraging about this race is that dynamic is inverted. The moderate lane is unbelievably crowded. You've got Jeb Bush, who 6 months ago, everyone assumed Jeb Bush would dominate the moderate lane. Jeb Bush is now beset from one side by Chris Christie and John Kasich, and from the other side by Rubio and Carlin. And the five of them have millions of dollars. They're going to rip each other apart. And moderates are behaving like conservatives always behave. And they're going to fight for months like that. You shift instead to the conservative lane. You look at the three candidates who've dropped out. Rick Perry, Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal. All three were competing predominantly in the conservative lane. You look at other candidates that were expected to be formidable in that lane, and they're not getting meaningful support. The final two candidates I'll discuss are Trump and Ben Carson. Both of them, I like and respect both Donald and Ben. I do not believe either one of them is going to be our nominee. I don't believe either one of them is going to be our president. I think both of them, their campaigns have a natural arc. And with both of them, I think gravity is pulling them down. We've seen that. Carson is further in that descent. But I think in both instances in particular, you look at Paris, you look at San Bernardino. It's given a seriousness to this race that people are looking for who is prepared to be a commander-in-chief, who understands the threats we face. Who am I comfortable having their finger on the button? Now, that's a question of strength, but it's also a question of judgment. And I think that is a question that is a challenging question for both of them. So my approach, much to the frustration of the media, has been to bear hug both of them and smother them with love. Because I think, look, people run as who they are. I believe that gravity will bring both of those campaigns down, and I think the lion's share of their supporters come to us.
That's right. So, either on the button is, I'm worried about Trump's finger on the Supreme Court button.
Yeah.
not the bomb, but the Supreme Court.
Well, let me say, I'll take a couple of minutes and wrap up, and then we'll. Here's another way of looking at the primary. To win, you need three things. You need message, grassroots, and money. On message, going back to framing the narrative, one of the reasons I'm thrilled that Donald Trump is running is he has framed the central narrative of this primary as who will stand up to Washington. Now, if that's the central narrative, the natural next question is, okay, who has stood up to Washington? Who's taken on not just Democrats, but leaders of our own party? If that is the question, we are fighting on a terrain, my record is markedly different from every other candidate on that stage. If that is the terrain and the narrative, we win that fight. Secondly, when it comes to grassroots, the grassroots enthusiasm we have on the ground is ridiculous and off the charts. There's a reason. Look, in the last 2 weeks, Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush's super PACs have both launched nasty attack ads. I've been attacked twice by Hillary Clinton, twice by Barack Obama, twice by the Wall Street Journal, and a columnist in the New York Times wrote
That's
a column.
That really, that lit the word.
Wrote
that
a column.
Was the craziest one of all.
Anybody but Cruz.
But it was so crazy. It was so
crazy. And my reaction to all of that was thank you for your endorsement.
That was Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. I agree with most of that analysis, but I do have some points to make because I think he has it about 3 out of 5 right. Now, what am I talking about? He said you need money, you need message. He calls it grassroots. I call it organization. You absolutely do need that. He's right on that. But if you've listened to past shows, you know I have an acronym called MAMA. You need MAMA, and you need all 5, not 3, you need 5. And the 2 that's missing are critical. absolutely critical, and that is momentum and ambition. Now, I think Ted Cruz has the ambition. He's not short in that area, but neither is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has money, has organization, has the message, but Donald Trump has something that Ted Cruz simply does not have enough of, and that's momentum. The Monmouth poll, and I used to live in Monmouth County, graduated from Monmouth Regional High School, nothing to do with the poll, just the brought up memories. They came out with a poll, and Donald Trump, this is a national poll, is the leader by 41%. Ted Cruz is number two, which is a good place to be. He's at 14%, almost only a third of where Donald Trump is. Now, remember, it's a national poll. You win delegates state by state. There are other polls that show Ted Cruz either in the lead or very close to Donald Trump in Iowa. The name of the game when you're running for president, either party, but the Republican Party in particular, you need to have the most delegates. You have to have the majority of the delegates. Otherwise, you run the danger, and you're hearing more and more in this phrase in the news, of a brokered convention. In other words, people get in rooms and trade. Right now, I don't think you're going to see a brokered convention. I'm now firmly of the opinion that if the ticket is Donald Trump at the top of the ticket with Ted Cruz as number two, the Republicans will win in a landslide victory. Now, that is not conventional wisdom. That is very much a minority point of view. If you listen to Democrats, they think Hillary Clinton is going to win, going away. She's going to destroy Donald Trump. I think that is a lot of wishful thinking. Donald Trump is already attacking Hillary Clinton where she needs to be attacked. Namely, she was Secretary of State and the foreign policy of this country, and the results are a total, complete disaster. They're failure. It's not an achievement, folks. It's a disaster, another complete disaster, and the American people know that. She was responsible for what happened in Libya and in Egypt and Iraq and in Syria. She's not totally responsible, but she was Secretary of State. She was in charge of the United States foreign policy. And now we have chaos in all those countries. And we have the Islamic State, radical Muslims that believe in the radical religion of Islam, a very violent and deadly religion, killing people and threatening this country. Remember, the Islamic State used to be Al-Qaeda in Iraq, that the U.S. military largely destroyed. And the few that they didn't kill, they put in prison. And then subsequently, they were let out, went to Syria, regrouped, retrained, re-equipped, and now are running large parts of northern Iraq, as well as northwestern Iraq, as well as northeastern Syria, and are launching terrorist attacks into Europe, the United States, and other countries. They're not a JV team, as President Obama once referred to them. They're deadly. They're serious. They were about 15,000 people. They're now upwards of 50,000. And of those 50,000, about 30,000 have come from other countries. They're attracting recruits, deadly recruits. One of the problems with radical Islam is, as Muslims get more and more devout, more religious, there is a temptation, a great temptation, that they become radical and become jihadist, in other words, holy warriors that want to take on the world and believe that theirs is the only religion, the last religion, and unbelievers, whether they're Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, whatever religion, their faith should be death. That's what we're up against. Many of them gladly want to become suicide bombers. That should give you pause, but because it's very difficult to counter suicide bombers. You really need to get ahead of the curve. And the problem is, as I said in the last show, there are over 1,600 million Muslims in the world. They're not all in the Middle East, by the way. The largest population of Muslims is in Indonesia. There are, I believe, 57 countries that are predominantly Islamic. And it's estimated, on the low side, 5%. On the high side, I've heard as high as 20%. Of those 1,600 million are radical Islamists. Let's say it's just 10%. That's 160 million people throughout the world. Now, they're not all active in the sense that they're jihadis yet, but it doesn't take much to convert them or take that last step, if you will. And we have a media that simply will not get into what's going on here. Why? Who would this hurt? Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton's foreign policy as well as Obama's foreign policy. Donald Trump will get into that. When he debates her, you better believe he's going to get into this. Hillary Clinton has a long history, and many people forget about this, but Donald Trump will bring it up. She was of the radical left when she was in college. She wrote her thesis on Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals. Note that title, Rules for Radicals. They want to overthrow the free market enterprise system. That's what they're about. As does radical Islam, wants to substitute our constitution and laws, which Sharia law, a religious law, turn this country into a theocracy. Now, many of you will say that's wishful thinking. I agree. But I never thought we would have a president such as Barack Obama, period. Not because of his color of his skin. It's because of his sheer incompetence, but really his deliberate intention to wreck this country. And he's succeeding, folks. He's succeeding. And he appoints people like to replace Hillary Clinton, such as John Kerry, who thinks climate change is the greatest threat facing mankind today. Give me a break. John Kerry doesn't have a clue about the science. Yet we're facing a real threat in radical Islam. And that's what this election will be about, amongst other things. Now, getting back to what Ted Cruz said. Ted Cruz has today, if you believe the poll, and let me say a few things about polling. They're a snapshot. The most important thing is the overall trends, both nationally and within the state. And why Ted Cruz does have momentum in Iowa and a few of the southern states, he has a problem. It's money. Money. Now, he's betting that if he can rack up two or three wins in February and in March, that will get him more money, and I think he's absolutely correct in that regard. So while you can have the best message and a very good organization, which I think he has, both of them, and ambition, he's short on money, but he's also short on momentum. Maybe he'll get it, and I need to emphasize this. All we have to go on right now are polls. And the problem with polls is they can and are manipulated. One way to manipulate the polls to get a result is who you sample. If you overweight it, for example, in terms of Democrats, guess what? You'll get results that the Democratic candidate's going to win. Are you surprised? I'm not. It should reflect the turnout. And that's where organization is important. Because no matter how well you've done in polls and whether you have consistency, and Donald Trump does have that consistency, the key is getting the voters out. That requires two rather essential things. They both require money. One is advertising, especially 7 to 14 days prior to the primary. You also, prior to that window, which is very close to the election date, you need to be running positive ads. And Ted Cruz is doing it. For example, I've noticed on several shows, usually they're talk radio shows, such as Rush Limbaugh, but others. There's a Ted Cruz ad in Texas. Remember, Ted Cruz is senator from Texas. You'd wonder why he's running it. Well, he wants to win Texas. He doesn't want Donald Trump to win Texas. So he's running very good ads because he's hitting on one very key issue, trust. And that's emphasized in these ads. And I've said many times, this election will be all about trust. Who do you trust? Because the American people are tired of being lied to, misled, and really been sold out. They don't trust Barack Obama because he lies to them so much, they don't want to hear him anymore. Even if they're true believer Democrats, they've turned him off. And Hillary Clinton has the deserved reputation for being a liar. So people won't listen to her. Obviously, Republicans don't. I don't listen to her. I can't stand listening to her. The same goes for Obama. So I don't listen. I don't trust him. You see, both lack an integrity problem. If Hillary Clinton was any other person than the front runner for the Democratic nomination, she would have been indicted by now. Haven't seen much movement from the Department of Justice in that area, and I don't think you are. And if this ever comes to a head, we're probably going to have the resignation of the FBI director. They have evidence, and I think more than enough evidence to indict. Now, they haven't gone public with that. And remember, the FBI does the investigation. It's up to the Department of Justice and the attorneys in the Department of Justice to make the determination whether there's enough evidence to indict. Who are these people? Largely Democrats. Definitely the Attorney General is and the President is. Do you think they're going to indict her? I don't, because they lack integrity, honesty, and people don't trust them. And that's an issue that Donald Trump, as well as Ted Cruz, needs to emphasize. Do you trust this woman? Does she have a record of achievement? The answer to that is absolutely not. It's a record of failure, disasters that have killed people. Donald Trump is making that case. He needs to get better at it. He needs to think out exactly what he's going to say, have the catchphrases, and he does. I listened to the Fox interview with Chris Wallace. I think most Americans today know that Donald Trump is associated with the tagline, "Make America Great Again." Terrific tagline. One of the best in, I would say, 100 years. I can't think of a better one. But he's added to it, in case you missed it. And he said, I think we need to revise it. Make America safe again. Ladies and gentlemen, that is what the American people want. Safety. They want to be secured in their lives and their property. And they can't be as long as the Islamic State exists, as well as the Islamic Republic of Iran. Both entities support terrorist activity throughout the world. They are a threat to humankind no matter where they are because of their fanatical religious ideology. Whether you call it a religion or ideology, I don't care. The results are these are highly motivated people that want to kill you. So the American people are looking for a president that will lead. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for both trust and leadership. And that's where I think Ted Cruz is missing something. Ted Cruz is very intelligent, very bright, very articulate. And he got that way because he emphasized when he was in college debating skills. And in law school, the professors were somewhat intimidated by him because he's bright, he's prepared, and he can talk. He can express himself. Those are all assets. Those are all strengths. And ideally, if a leader has that, that's a very big plus. But there's more to leadership than talking. You need experience. There is no substitute for experience. And what I'm talking about is running a large organization of people. And the United States government is one of the largest, probably the largest in the world. I don't see that on his resume. Yes, he's an outstanding litigator, especially for appeals, where you're in front of a panel of judges who are asking you questions, or you're in the courtroom. That is an important skill set, especially if you want to be attorney general. But I haven't seen many, I know there have been a few, presidents that are litigators. Or want to be on the Supreme Court. I know there are a few that did. Taft comes immediately to mind. And that is his problem. Donald Trump, whether you like him or not, has run a very large organization that's been very successful. You see, that requires dealing with a lot of people and juggling a lot of balls in the air, more than being able to answer a judge's question or your professor's question. It requires skills in dealing and convincing and persuading people that don't agree with you. Now, many of you say, well, that's what he's doing when he's in a courtroom. No, there's a difference here. Organizations have missions, have objectives that need to be accomplished in a timely manner. It involves trade-offs. It involves recruiting people, retaining people, motivating people, firing people. That is not on Ted Cruz's resume. And let me quickly say something. I have four people on what I call my favorite or short list. The only reason they're on the list is these are four people I could vote for. There are a lot of Republicans I simply will not vote for. And they are all establishment Republicans, political elitist establishment Republicans. Who are they? Jeb Bush, never going to vote for him. Will stay home if he's at the top of the ticket. Marco Rubio, the same way, and I'll have more to say on him in a minute. Chris Christie, I won't vote for those three. There's another one, and this might surprise you. At one time, I was a big fan of John Kasich when he was in Congress. Very impressed with him, agreed with him. He's changed. He's not my cup of tea anymore. Always popular in Ohio, and that's why he'll be on the stage. And Ohio's an important state. But I wouldn't put him on the ticket. If Donald Trump puts him on the ticket, I'm out of here. Or if he puts any of the people I've mentioned so far, I'm out of here. I'll stay home. You see, the American people have been abandoning both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party because they know that the elites, The political elites in this country do not have at heart the interest of the American people and the American worker. That's why more and more people, when Gallup, for example, asks them, what is your political affiliation, will say independent. They've had enough of both parties. They don't trust both parties. And that's my point. Trust is an issue. Integrity is an issue. So Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are on my list, as is Ben Carson and Rand Paul. The problem is Rand Paul, I think the last time I looked, he's about at 2, 3, 4%. It depends on the poll. At this point in time, you need to be in double digits. You need to be at least 10%. Who are their candidates at 10%? If you believe the recent poll, Donald Trump at 41%, Ted Cruz at 14%, and Marco Rubio at 10%. As far as I'm concerned, those are the three that should be on the stage. And I don't care for Marco Rubio, but they're the ones that have convinced enough people. CNN could have done a lot of people a favor by putting the cutoff at 10%. Obviously, they went much lower. By the end of February, the end of March, most of these other candidates will be gone, because if you don't have the money, you can't get your message out. And that's the key thing I was going to say. You need money to have advertising, both positive and negative advertising. You also need money to have an organization. Ted Cruz in a few states has that. Donald Trump is the only candidate that has the money that can do this in all states. And he will. And he knows how to run a large organization. And we haven't seen anything yet. But the key will be who wins these primaries. As I was saying, advertising and organization is critical as you approach the election day. That's only common sense. The problem with advertising, or the challenge with advertising, is you need money. You need money to buy the media time, both on radio and television, as well as money to buy print material that you would hand out or distribute to the various voters in the state you're running in. All that takes money. It's not cheap. And even if you have the money, you need to have a message. And it has to be a message that resonates with the voters. And Donald Trump, whether you like him or not, has picked the number one issue with the American people, not in terms of ranking, in terms of their concerns, but right now it's immigration, both legal and illegal. And now we have an additional dimension. Actually, it's been a dimension there that's always been. Immigration, especially illegal immigration, is a jobs issue. First and foremost, it's a job issue. We have 30 to 50 million illegal aliens here. Not all of them are working. They do bring their families. They do bring their loved ones. And some of those stay home with the kids. But at least 20 to 30 million are working. And they're doing jobs that Americans in the past, present, and future do. It's not a question that they won't do the jobs. It's just they now have an additional competition in the labor market from between 20 and 30 million. And I think it could be a lot higher, but that's the low end. It's not 11 or 12 million. In past shows, I've gone over this, and I don't really have time, but the key point is it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian or a Communist or Socialist. Most people have to work for a living, and now they have 20 to 30 million illegal aliens that are competing for jobs at all levels, mainly in entry-level type jobs, low-skill type jobs, manual labor, and examples of that are construction, maintenance, cooking, maids, busboys, meatpacking, and the list goes on and on. So Donald Trump is and has been leading and increasing his lead when you compare him with all the other candidates. I'm not surprised at all. The only big question, and I don't think it is as big as some people make it out, is will these polls translate first to votes in the various elections in the various states and in turn to delegates? What you need to understand is some states are proportional. In other words, if you get 40% of the vote, you get roughly 40% of the delegates. Other states, such as Florida, for example, are winner-take-all. So if you get the largest number of people voting for you, you're going to take all the delegates. Many of the earlier states are proportional. That helps the candidates that are not number one or two, but might be three, four, five, or six. Because if they cherry pick which states they're going to put their resources in, they can come to the convention with some delegates. Not that they'll get the nomination, but they do have some say. They do have some cards, if you will, or chips, however you like to think of it. And that's why you're hearing more and more about a potential broker convention if one of the candidates, and I think the only candidate that really could get anywhere close to the majority is Donald Trump. And as much as I like Ted Cruz and are impressed with him, and I think he'll definitely have a lot of delegates, I think he will be number two and number one and maybe three in some states. One, two, and three. And that helps him out, especially in the earlier states where his delegate count will go up. But he's up against a big competitor, a huge competitor, a person that thrives on competition because he's had to deal with it throughout his career. He's been doing real estate development projects as well as running casinos, and now he's out of that business. But the point I'm trying to make, he has a lot of experience starting small and gradually bigger and better projects. He knows what he's doing. He knows various aspects to it, including the advertising and the fact that you need an organization and there are lead times and needed to hire outstanding people to come up with the ads. And you're going to see two types of ads. One is the very positive ads. And I referred to earlier Ted Cruz, for example, in Texas. I'm sure he's doing it in other states, is running a positive ad where the theme is trust, that I trust and you should trust Ted Cruz. Very smart, very good ads. They don't blow me away, but they get the point across because that is a very sharp contrast with his opponents. No, he's not running against Barack Obama, but Hillary Clinton was in his administration, and she has a big trust issue problem. Call it the trust gap. She also has a likability problem. So I'm not surprised at all that Ted Cruz has been the beneficiary, for example, of Ben Carson falling in the polls. You know, there are just so many votes, and when people call, they're going to respond. And one other problem with the polls, some people are just not truthful. They won't tell you or they mislead you. That's why you have, it's within the realm of error, depending on the size of the sample. It could be 2%, 3%, 5%. You got to be careful there as well. And you also have to be careful who's doing the polling and they're not overweighting it with Democrats. And that is done. So polling is very much an art, but it's really at best an indicator. It's a snapshot. More persuasive is the overall trend. And right now, the beneficiaries of that trend are three people, mainly Donald Trump. Doesn't surprise me at all. You see, the media, left, right, and center, as well as the leadership of both parties, went after Donald Trump last week, and their objective was to take him out. And they're still doing it. And I have a clip. I'm not going to play it, but just before preparing the show, I was a little surprised because I've always been impressed with this lady. She does investigative journalism, and she was given the conventional wisdom. Donald Trump may get the nomination, but he'll never get elected because Hillary has the best network around. Well, I remember in 2008 that the election was hers, and I don't remember her winning the nomination, and she has a lot of baggage, rather heavy baggage. Benghazi, there's a movie coming out in January on Benghazi. You don't think that's going to have some impact on the election? I think it will. The timing is perfect. Not for Hillary Clinton, but for the movie coming out. And if it's a good movie, a lot of people will see the movie. And I don't know how reliable it is or faithful to what happened. I don't think it's going to help her. It's not going to help the Democratic Party. That's going to bring out memories. And last time, the Benghazi, remember, happened on September 11th, 2012, less than 60 days before the election. And what did what did the Democratic Party do? They changed the subject, and the media went along with it. And that's something I need to emphasize. The American people understand, the ones that pay attention. You always have what are now called low information voters. I call them DOTS, D-O-T-S, the dummies on the street. They're not interested in politics. They don't follow the news. They don't listen to the news. They don't know what's going on. That's why they're low information. They have other interests, and it's not politics. It's not elections. So if you ask them questions, they don't know. They don't care. That's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. People have lives to leave, interests that they want to pursue, avocations, vocations, hobbies, sports, families. Well, I'm interested in politics. Most people aren't. And to the extent they are, they pay attention right before the election where they, I want to go to the polls. One is you got to motivate them to come out, and you hope your objective is they vote for you. Now, the great unknown I have is I don't know how good Donald Trump's ads, or as well as the other candidates' ads, are going to be. I have no idea. And really, it's too early to tell. Oh, you have a few candidates. This is Cruz with some money. They want to spend it. That's fine with me. But it's rather early, even for Texas. 1 March is when Texas has its primary. A lot of delegates there. And Florida. Florida's winner take all. But besides advertising and how good it is, how effective it is, and by effective, the key to good advertising, it could be the slickest, the get a lot of attention, people see it, but do they get motivated enough to go out and vote? That's the key. And that also requires organization. People making the phone calls, calling the voters to get out the vote. Turnout is absolutely essential because many people don't vote in primaries. Voter turnout can be very low or it could be very high. I think it's going to be very high, but I don't know. I think in the Republican contest, I think it's going to be high. In the Democratic primaries, I doubt it because most people think we're going to have Queen Hillary as president. I don't think so, but I could be wrong. It's just my opinion, one person's opinion. I think I'm going to be right because I follow it, and Donald Trump will go on the attack, and that's the second part of the advertising. Oh, you're going to have the positive ads. But what is Donald Trump going to do? He's going to have attack ads, attacking his competition. And that's what I wanted to talk about. Who do you think Donald Trump is going to attack tomorrow? Because he's done it. I've watched most of the debates, not every minute, but I've watched most of the debates. What Donald Trump tends to do is to go after one, maybe two people. But he goes to a debate and in his mind, and he's ready for it, I'm going to attack one of these candidates. I'm trying to get him out of the race. We saw that with Rand Paul. We saw that with John Kasich, as well as Jeb Bush several times. But his focus will be on one, maybe two people. Now, who do you think he's going to go after? If you ask me, I tell him who to go after. First and foremost, take out Marco Rubio. Attack, attack, attack. Because Marco Rubio is the neoconservative candidate. He's also fast becoming the establishment candidate as well. And he prides himself as being the expert on foreign policy. I agree with Trump. He's overrated. And I don't trust Marco Rubio because the Tea Party backed Marco Rubio. The only reason Marco Rubio is senator is he had a strong backing of grassroots people, the Tea Party movement. And without that, I seriously doubt he would have been senator from Florida. He wasn't the establishment candidate then. If anything, the establishment was running against him. I bring this history up because once he got to the Senate, his head was turned. He became the fair-haired boy of the neocons, Senator McCain, Senator Lindsey Graham, as well as several talk shows such as Bill Bennett, Hugh Hewitt. He's the neocons poster boy, fair hair poster boy. He's the future, and he is articulate. He's an attorney, and he's articulate. But he's an opportunist, and he made the wrong decision, a big wrong decision on immigration. And people remember that. And the American people, the ones that are paying attention to it, and that's most, don't like the Gang of Eight. And the fact that the Republican Party, together with the Democratic Party, or at least part of the Republican Party, and all of the Democratic Party, want open borders, want more and more illegal immigration as well as legal immigration. Marco Rubio ultimately wanted to have all those illegal aliens on a pathway to citizenship. In other words, amnesty. Now he's changed his tune. He's learned that comprehensive immigration reform is not the way to go, but it's a little late. You see, Marco Rubio is a big government and now an establishment candidate. After this debate, even though Jeb Bush will have money, I don't see the dial moving at all. Unless Jeb Bush comes to this debate and hits home run after home run, which he hasn't done in any of the other debates. In other words, comes alive, steals the show, which I doubt. And it is a show. You better believe this is performance art. Jeb Bush is at 3%. That's not where you want to be. It's not where he planned to be. He planned to be the front runner. He's not. He does have money, though. And money counts. So I'm not counting him out because money buys advertising. And if that is his strategy, that's how he's going to get elected, by an ad campaign. It better be one hell of an ad campaign. See, Jeb Bush has the same problem Marco Rubio has, and that's in the immigration area as well as in Common Core. So he can have a lot of money and have a rather effective ads, but if he's wrong on the issues, in other words, the message is not the right message that doesn't resonate with the voters, he's not going to win. Oh, he'll get some delegates. I'm convinced. If you have a lot of money, if you had over $100 million, I don't know how much he has left, but if you have that kind of money and you have a super PAC, you should be getting some delegates, but that's not the name of the game. The name of the game is to have the majority of delegates so you don't have a brokered convention. That's what Donald Trump does not want. He wants to win it outright, and he has a definite pathway to victory. And remember, it's from now until mid-January, there's no other debate. So this debate is crucial because it does, in many respects, focus people on the candidates. I think this debate might have more viewers than all the other ones. I don't know if it's going to be a good debate. We'll see. And you got to remember, and I keep repeating it, the media is not on the side of Republicans, and specifically not on the side of Donald Trump. Oh, they would love Jeb Bush or even Marco Rubio or Kasich to win this debate. I don't think it's going to happen, but it could. Because who asked the questions? The networks. And roughly 90-95% of the people that work at those networks are progressive liberal Democrats. I have a new term for the people that are both news and commentary in the news. They are, I call them Napsters. What we have on television today are the Napsters. Who are the Napsters? The NAP is Narrative Agenda Propagandist. What they are peddling, what they are showing, is propaganda. Propaganda is slanted. It's biased. It's designed to favor one party over another or one candidate over another. Narrative is a story. They will tell you a story. It may be true. It may be misleading, or it could be a lie. And they do it all the time. And they have an agenda. Their agenda is to elect Democrats and to support our president, who happens to be a Democrat. They want Hillary Clinton to be the next president. So the Napsters are trying to put you to sleep. But what they want to do, if they can, and they're really going to try during this debate, is to take out Donald Trump. Donald Trump knows this. He's no dummy. And the other candidates that are left, they know this is really probably their best and last shot to knock out the Donald. Hopefully, Donald will come to this debate rested and prepared. And my advice to him is to take out Marco Rubio, as well as Chris Christie. And if you have time and opportunity, take a couple of shots at John Kasich and Jeb Bush. But I wouldn't waste much time on them. John Kasich, frankly, turns a lot of people off. I don't care about his record 20 years ago. That's being blunt. Even though it's important and impressive, I don't care. What are you going to do for me today? Kasich knows this. He's a bore. And I won't vote for him, Bush, Rubio, or Christie. The two most dangerous people on that stage for Donald Trump are Marco Rubio and Chris Christie. Chris Christie is putting a lot of energy into winning New Hampshire. He knows he really doesn't have a shot in Iowa, so he's not really a factor in Iowa. Ted Cruz is, Donald Trump is. So for all practical purposes, both Rubio and Christie have written off Iowa. They're not going to get anywhere. But New Hampshire is a different kettle of fish. And that's why Christie and Rubio have to be taken out. And what I mean by that, he has to go after them. And he can't talk in generalities. He has to be specific. And if he has the organization, they've given him the opposition research to study, and then he needs to get with his communication people and already have prepared what he's going to say, and then say it. It'll come out like it's spontaneous, and it might come out in a response or attack by either Chris Christie or Marco Rubio, and then he needs to take his shot and knock him out. In other words, Donald Trump has to deliver a number of knockout punches. This is going to be a gang attack on Donald Trump, and he knows it. Now, some of them might hold back. But they're so far behind, then they're going nowhere. And that's the point I'm trying to make. They're not many days until 1 February. They're not many days to 1 March when you have a number of states, including Texas, having their primaries. That's why I said in the last show, by 1 April, April Fool's Day, we'll have a very, very good idea whether Donald Trump has turned his poll numbers into a high delegate count. And by then, we'll probably have 3, maybe 4 candidates still in the race. The others will drop out. By 1 April, 3, 4 at most. I wish that was the case right now, but who cares about my wishes? And I agree with Ted Cruz's analysis. It's a very crowded field in terms of, now he called them moderates. He's being a little diplomatic there. They're a left-to-center, big government Republicans. That's what they're about. That's why I can't stand them. They're part of the problem. They're not part of the solution. They just want to grow government bigger and bigger. Now, they want to spend a lot of that money on the military. I'm for a strong military, but the United States government spends more on defense or military spending than any other nation in the world. As a matter of fact, you'd have to add up at least a dozen countries to equal the amount of money the United States spends on national defense. And what the political elitist establishment wants to do is expand military spending and intervene in country after country. Now, I understand it's a dangerous place out there. I'm not an isolationist, but I'm not an interventionist either. And that has been the problem. The United States has a long history since World War II, actually before, but really after World War II, of intervening in country after country, either military intervention, where it's publicly known, wars, or intervening with special operations, special forces, namely CIA covert operations in country after country after country. And that's why there are billions of people that hate America now. There are unintended consequences, and unfortunately, America is the ugly American. It's deeply resented throughout the world, its intervention. People don't like other countries flying drones over their heads and bombing them. You're not making many friends when you do that, or invading their country, no matter what your motives are. Oh, they'll love you when you liberate them from a dictator. But within 6 months or a year at most, they view you as an occupier. And the problem with military intervention in country after country is we don't know the country. We don't know the people or the country. We don't know their history, their religion, their language, their culture. Yet we're going to turn them into a democracy. Nation building has been a failure. And our record being policemen of the world is at best mixed. But the neocons are the big interveners. They like to call people like me isolationists. I'm not an isolationist, but I know that our founding fathers, including George Washington, were right. We should trade with every nation. What we should not be doing is intervening in nation after nation after nation, whether militarily or covertly with the CIA. And that's what we've done under Democratic and Republican administrations. If you wonder why they hate us, that's one of the reasons, one of a big reason. People resent it. Don't you think you would resent it if a foreign government were dropping bombs in your neighborhood or invading your country? Of course you would. And that's what we're doing in country after country. And we tend to ally ourselves with authoritarians or dictators. So the people of the country even resent us more. And what those authoritarian dictators do is use, for example, Islam to say, I'm not the problem, it's the United States. So you have a big government Republican Party, largely wants to spend more and more money on the military, also some social or entitlement programs. And then you have the Democratic Party that wants to expand welfare and entitlements. So both parties are big government parties. The problem is we've run out of money. We're way beyond the means of the American people to support this size of government with just their tax dollars. That's why we have to keep on borrowing. And down that road lies ruin and a day of reckoning where we very much become like Greece. We're not Greece yet. We have anywhere from 5 to 15 years, maybe 20 years at the outside. The only thing that'll save us is changing the direction of this country around, and that's going to require leadership. It's not going to require another Harvard lawyer or an attorney. We have plenty of those, and their record is, to say the least, not very good. Spare me from another Ivy League attorney, whether it's Harvard, Yale, or any other of the Ivy League schools. They have not demonstrated leadership. Oh, they can talk a good game. And they have their friends or fellow travelers, the Napsters, the narrative agenda propagandist. That's what much of news today is. It's propaganda. And they tell you a story, the narrative, because they're advocating an agenda of a political party or a political candidate. And the American people know it. They've woken up. Not all. You're always going to have the low information voter, the dummies on the street that don't follow this. The only good thing is a lot of them don't vote either. Some of them do, and they're dangerous in that regard. So the key to getting delegates is you got to have money, organization, message, momentum, and ambition. Donald Trump has all of them. Ted Cruz does not have all of them. He's short in the money area. He's also short in the momentum area. He's doing better than all of that crowded establishment field. Kasich's going nowhere. Bush is going nowhere. Christie is going nowhere. Rubio could go with a lot of money. Remember, if you have a lot of money, what can you do? You can run a lot of negative ads as well as positive ads. I call them the nowhere men. They're nowhere in the polls. They need help. Listen to the songs by the Beatles, Nowhere Man and Help. That's the situation with Rand Paul, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, John Kasich, Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, and I hope with Marco Rubio. They're nowhere men. They're at 0% or 1% or 2% or 3%. They're not at 50%. You have today three candidates that are in double digits. Donald Trump at 41%, Cruz at 14%, and Rubio at 10%. Will those numbers change? Of course they will change. They will go up and down. But does anyone in his right mind think that the nowhere men, the 0 or 1 or 2 or 3% candidates are going anywhere? Yeah, they might pick up a delegate here and there in those states that have proportional, but you usually need to be in the top 2 or 3 to get that, and I doubt they will, but they might. You see, polls are just indicators, early indicators. The key will be how good an organization you have to get the vote out. Voter turnout will be absolutely essential. Those candidates that can get their people motivated and go out to vote in primaries will win. And if you've noticed, Donald Trump's supporters really support Donald Trump. They will go out and vote. That should scare the other candidates. He's drawing huge crowds. You've seen the events. You go to YouTube, put Donald Trump's name in, and just look at all the speeches. You'll hear a stump speech. And he gives this more or less the same speech. He mixes it up a little, occasionally puts in something new. That invariably means the press will attack him. Like last week, they attacked him on his temporary, keep emphasizing it, I emphasize it, a temporary ban of Muslims coming into the United States. He should have been, in retrospect, a lot clearer. But he's made those clarifications. Here's the irony. The American people agree with him. I am very, very familiar what radical Islam is. And the fact that you have 5, 10, 20% of the Muslims are radical Muslims. Not all Muslims are radical Muslims. Their religion is a radical religion, though. And that's the problem. The people that truly become the true believers are the ones that will shoot you because the Quran says they should. And Donald Trump is absolutely right. We need to make America safe again. Make America great again, and then make America safe again. Do it concurrently. And that's going to take a leader, not an insider follower. Most people in Congress are not leaders. They're followers. They don't get ahead of the herd or the voters. They follow the voters. The problem is they become disconnected with what the voters want and are oblivious to the fact, not all of them, but most of them, are oblivious to the fact the American people are mad. They're outraged because they're tired of being lied to, misled, and no results. You see, good intentions are never enough. Results count. Talk, talk, talk. That has become the Republican Party, especially the political elitist establishment. There's some good people. I'm very, very impressed with Senator Jeff Sessions. But he's not running for president. He's outstanding on immigration. And I learned something this morning. Sometimes you learn something on talk radio. I haven't been able to check it out, but it seems somewhat reasonable. I have reservations on all the candidates on immigration. Obviously, Donald Trump is the best, but he's not ideal. There's a lot more he could say, and maybe he's holding back to when he runs against Hillary. But I had reservations about Ted Cruz, because while they're all Republicans are strong about securing the borders, they have an agenda, and one of their agendas is to increase the number of legal immigrants that are coming into this country. For your information, a little over 1 million people every year come to the United States, get a green card. They're legal immigrants. The powers that be, both in the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party, want to increase that number first to 2 million and then to 3 million per year. And let me emphasize that. Right now, it's over 1 million a year. You see, between 1924 and 1965, less than 175,000 people came into this country legally per year. If memory serves, I think the exact number was 167,000. Obviously, there was some fluctuation, but it was very low. Then we have the start of changing the immigration laws, first with Kennedy in 65, and there have been several bills after that, including one under Reagan's administration. So now, where are we at? Did the American people say, whoa, we need at least 1 or 2 or 3 million more a year? No, the American people did not say that. The American people are not demanding more immigrants. Who's demanding it? Yes, the donor class that provides the funds for these campaigns. That's why I say both parties have been corrupted by big money, and they don't care about you and me anymore. They don't care about the American worker or Americans that were born, raised, educated here that are American citizens. They don't care about them. They're more concerned about illegal aliens or increasing the number of legal immigrants from over 1 million to 2 to 3 million per year. That's what they're trying to do. That's why I will never support Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, John Kasich, Chris Christie. They're part of the open borders crowd. Oh, they'll talk a good game. They'll tap dance around it. And they'll all say, we need to secure the borders. It doesn't matter. Let's say we seal the borders. And not one illegal immigrant could get in. We still have a problem. We have 30 to 50 million illegal aliens here that should be deported under current law. We don't need a change of the law. What we need is a change of administration where immigration laws are enforced. And that's what Democrats and Republicans and independents are demanding. And the political leadership of both parties have sold them out. And the American people understand that. And the only candidate that is running, that is sending, that has made this an issue is Donald Trump. That is why the media and their employees, I listen to Fox, and I've noticed in the last week, a number of their employees want to get on Rupert Murdoch's good side because they know what the boss wants, open borders. So they went after Trump, had hissy fits, went hysterical, dumped on Trump. Maybe I'll get a raise. Oh, that's what's going on. People suck up to bosses, owners all the time. I was in business. I know. The problem is the American people have to compete with all these illegal aliens as well as the legal immigrants. And Donald Trump had the nerve, the courage, actually the wisdom to make it the issue because he identified it as a leading wedge issue, which is exactly what it is. And now we have another dimension of the immigration especially illegal immigration issue, really is a jobs issue, it's a crime issue, it's a drug issue, and now it very much is a national security issue. It has at least four dimensions. And the American people are threatened, as they should be, when this country over the last 15 to 20 years has been invaded every year by 2, 3, 4 million people a year. And 1, 2, sometimes 3 million stay every year. You do that for 15, 20 years, you have somewhere between 30 and 50 million illegal aliens here. That's what's going on. They know it. They see it in their cities. You can't hide it. It's there. It's in their schools. It's in their hospitals. And they've had it up to here. And a lot of the illegal and legal immigrants get welfare. I know they're not supposed to get it, but they're not supposed to be here, and they're here. The Americans are tired of being walked on, and they're not going to vote for any candidate that does not have both legal and illegal immigration have the right position on that. If they don't have the right position, and that is the establishment with their open borders, that's Bush, Kasich, Rubio, Christie, and some others, but those are the leaders. They're not going to vote for them. They're not going to come out. Like I said, there are only a couple of candidates that I would go and vote for. The rest, I stay home. Now, if you ask me what's the solution is a viable new third party. That's the only thing, frankly, that's going to change the situation. Let's assume for a minute that we have a Trump-Cruz ticket and they win. They still have to deal with the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Nothing really is going to change in those parties. They're still going to be for open borders. I'm talking the majority here. There are a small group, and I small, probably 75 to 100 tops, that are right on immigration. The rest, they're open borders. They've been corrupted. They've taken the money. They're expecting the campaign contributions. Their only interest is a career in politics and getting reelected. They already have the incumbent advantage, and they get the money, and it's difficult to unseat an incumbent. Thank you for listening, and I'll probably have a little bit more to say on the upcoming debate tomorrow. With that, let me close with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.